I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence. Do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer, up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. And I need to do that because I will forget. I think I'll remember, and then I'll forget. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So we're in for a treat. Tonight we are discussing step four. We have Dave and Billy on the panel, my sponsor and my grand sponsor, respectively. So I'm on my best behavior tonight. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the first paragraph on page 64 in the big book. That's where we're going to start. And then each of the gentlemen will share for 4 or 5 minutes on each paragraph. And that's how the meeting goes. There's 7 paragraphs, so we probably won't get to all of them, but we'll clip along smartly. So, we're going to start on page 64. Step 4 says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Billy?
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Billy.
Hey, Billy.
Hey, Billy.
And I'm used to talking into a microphone, so if you can't hear me, just raise your hand or something. I'm kind of weak in my voice. I'm an alcoholic. I belong to the New Day group of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's my home group. And I've been in AA for 31 years now. I'm one of those white chip wonders, you know, never had to go out again to relapse. And to me, that's a miracle. And we're going to be talking about the fourth step here, and before I did my fourth step, I know that I was deathly afraid. I was very anxious, nervous, neurotic, worried, whatever words you want to use. But I was not in a spiritual place, okay? But the fellas in my home group and my sponsor helped me to do my fourth step. And I'm forever grateful for that. I wish I could tell you I did it like in the third week or the third month or even the third year. But I used to come to meetings every day. I didn't drink, and I was a dry drunk for 3 years. And I was miserable. And I didn't know why. Why can't I have what they have? And they told me, well, if you do what we do, you might get it. So anyway, they helped me. And this one man in particular, I was at a meeting in Birchwood on a Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And there was about 30, 35 people there. And his name was Elmo. Elmo was a very big man, big stature, with pure white hair. He looked like God, okay? He scared me. I was scared to death of Elmo. And Elmo asked a question of the group. He says, how many people have done their fourth and fifth step here? And about three people raised their hands. And I almost fell off my chair because I thought everybody else was so far ahead of me. You know, we were all in the same boat. He says, okay, tonight I want to hear why you have not done it yet. And that turned out to be one of the best meetings I ever went to, because I heard every lie, every excuse, every alibi, anything I told myself. You know, like, when I get better, I'm going to do these steps. You know, it's one of my lies. But I thank Elmo. Elmo passed on, but he's still with me. And before I started the fourth step, they encouraged me to write the third step prayer on top of my sheet. Well, I didn't even know where the third step prayer was in the book, to tell you the truth, until somebody pointed it out to me. And I'm going to point it out to you. It's on page 63. I'm not going to repeat it, but I wrote it on a card and kept it on my night table, and I said it every morning after that. I got on my knees, which I never did before either. I was afraid somebody would come in and see me and I'd make believe I was fixing the radiator or something. But anyway, just fear again, you know. But anyway, that there's a little clause in there that says, relieve me of the bondage of self. And that was the key. Every time that I got stuck in doing my fourth step, I would go back to the third step prayer. And that helped me to get started. And that's enough out of me. I think David ought to start.
Thanks, Billy. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
I'm also a member of the New Day Group in Virginia Beach. My sobriety date is July 14, 2002. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor men who sponsor men. And it's a great thing. I need all the help I can get. The two things I circled in here on this paragraph was the decision and then the at once followed. And I was about 6 months sober. I'd done steps one and two with my sponsor, and then I'd spent about 5 months, you know, scared of step four. And I was feeling physically better, you know, I was riding that pink cloud and I didn't see any real need, you know, to keep going, you know. Plus, I didn't have any higher power. So, I mean, I was working on that and I was using AA. And so, of course, what happened was all the things I had done, all those resentments, all the shame and the guilt started swimming around in my head. And I remember the day vividly. I'd gone to a meeting in the morning, and I was driving to a meeting that night, and I could taste the alcohol. I knew that would take care of the things I was feeling, at least temporarily. And I went to that meeting, and I left there, and I still had the obsession. It was back. And And I stopped at a T-intersection where Rosemont hits Virginia Beach Boulevard at the stoplight, and my favorite bar was a mile one way, and the Oxford House was a mile the other way where I was living. And I said, God, please get me home tonight. And that was my third step prayer, like it says in the book. You know, it can be worded however you want, but it was the first time I really abandoned myself to God and said, I need you. And I got home that night, and when I woke up in the morning, I knew what to do at once. I just went straight to the library and started writing my horse stop. It wasn't, at that point, it really wasn't a decision. They say you know you've done your third step when you start the fourth step, right? And that's what I did. And you know, it took 2 days, probably 10 or 12 hours of writing, but it all came out. And it was a very worthwhile experience and a very freeing experience. And like everything else in AA, I wish I had done it sooner.
All right, we're going to continue on page 64. Again, our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which had caused our failure. Being convinced itself manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations.
Okay. What came to mind when you were reading was, there used to be an old song, we have to accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative. Well, I guess that's what I was on the road to do, you know? But, I remember my sponsor and the guys in the home group kept on telling me, turn it over, Billy, turn it over. And I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. Turn what over? Yeah. And then one day I was sitting in a coffee shop by myself and I was playing with my spoon. And I looked at my spoon and I was upside down. And I turned it over and I was right side up. I said, oh, that's what they're talking about. It was my perception, what I was seeing. I was seeing what I saw, I believed, okay? And I wasn't always right. And I know that now. But that spoon, that was a big deal for me. You know, that helped me. And it's all like that. A lot of people think that they're real complicated principles, you know, but they're simple ideas. And I have to bring it down to that level for me so that I can comprehend some of what's going on. One of the things that I had a tough time was, looking at things honestly, you know. The way that they really are, what's real and what's not real. And I had a good sponsor that helped me with that. He taught me you have to uncover the facts like an inventory. You have to uncover it, discover what the heck is going on, and then discard the bad inventory. So it was a moral inventory, and I was shocked to find out that I was supposed to write something good about myself, too. That didn't come into a little later on, but that scared me more than anything, because I couldn't think of anything good. And he said, do you want to be sober? I said, yeah. He says, start with that one. You know, kept it simple for me. That's important for me. And he told me to do it as quickly as I could. Do it promptly and don't have any regrets. You're going to dig up a lot of stuff, you know, and you're going to beat yourself up probably about, you know, guilt and shame and all that, which is silly, because I found out later on, that's just my ego talking to me, you know? God just wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. He's not going to give me an assignment that's going to make me miserable. So I had to change my thinking. That's what the whole thing was about. I had to get rid of the stinking thinking that I had in my head. I used to say my filter was dirty. You know, like the filter in the ceiling? I had to change my filter. The things that blocked me from God, of course, resentments was the head of the list. Fears came next, selfishness and dishonesty. I had to learn to replace these things with honesty, humility, trust, forgiveness, and faith. And these were all foreign words to me, so to speak. AA has its own language. You know, they call it the language of the heart. But when two AAs get together and talk to each other, they understand. But if somebody's not in the program, you know, they don't know what the heck you're talking about. They think you're nuts anyway. But I had to replace these things, the old stuff with the new stuff. And I had to understand that I was in denial for a long time. And the word I learned for denial was something like, didn't even know I was lying, you know? That was me. It was all in my head. And I had this other thing about ignorance. I hated to be called dumb or stupid. I don't like that. But in the big book, it talks about contempt before investigation. I was ignorant, but I was I had this power to ignore the truth. That's what they were telling me. I was making a big deal of it. But all they were saying, Billy, you know, you lie to yourself, you don't even know how sick you are. And I didn't like that, but I came to know that they were right. And let's see. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that's the nature of my disease in the big book. I like to think of it as being self-absorbed, okay? I'm always thinking about me. Oh, I still do. I mean, let's face it, I've got to be truthful here. But, you know, what's in it for me? That type of attitude. So I'm still working on it, you know, a work in process, one day at a time. David.
Thanks, Billy. Dave, alcoholic. Well, he said most of what I had, but you know, I circled five different phrases here that meant truth or honesty in those two paragraphs, and you know, that is something I just didn't know how to do with myself. You know, I have this mental obsession that I can talk myself into anything, you know, and I think it's the truth. And that can go for pretty much anything in my life. But when it came to alcohol and alcoholism and the damage I was doing, I could lie to myself. You know, and as a teenager, I think, you know, I remember hearing about how hard it was to be a teenager and coming of age and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't go through any of that because I never did this process of looking at myself. Or I drank, you know, and all those feelings didn't affect me because I drank, and that was the solution, you know. So I never learned how to really take a look at myself. And luckily, when I got to AA, you guys had directions, you know, and it was pretty easy to follow those directions once I was willing to do that and had taken that third step. And you told me what to look for, that Billy said, the fear, resentment, selfishness, dishonesty. And you also, like Billy said, told me to look at, list my assets as well, and I was taught that I wanted to replace these self-centered fear-based defects that I created with these assets that God had given me. And that's been the process I'm still working on. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
All right. So we're continuing on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. We were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with?
Okay. I have a question, you know. What is relapse? You know, I heard a lot of talk about relapse when I first came to AA, and of course that scared the heck out of me. And what's the first cause of relapse?
Drinking.
Well, I didn't have any idea. Yeah, that helps. But relapse starts way before the first drink. I didn't know that. Didn't make sense to me at the time either, but relapse does not start with the first drink. It starts with my stinking thinking. As soon as I get those thoughts in my head, then the relapse starts. And then I get into a situation where real important for me in my resentment list, lack of power was my dilemma. The resentment is the number one offender, the book tells me. I didn't know what they were talking about. Some call it a killer, you know? Well, yeah, it kills my spirit, you know? And I'll drink again if I hold on to my resentments. So I knew I had to do something about them. Some of my resentments, you know, with people and places and things, was like I had a resentment against God, and, you know, the first guy. And I knew he didn't like me. He knew what I did, so why should he help me? You know? And then my wife, yeah, I messed up real bad there. My parents, when I was younger, as just a kid, you know, they never saw me sober. They died before I was sober. My employers, plural. The courts, the police, the church, you know, name something, you know. But they all had power over me. See, they had authority, which I didn't like. And it seemed like they were all in conspiracy against me. Seemed that way. Then I found out, you know, it's a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's the way the big book describes it. Seemingly is the key word. I only thought that it was hopeless, and it wasn't. And these feelings of conspiracy, you know, they couple with jealousy, mistrust, anger, envy, loneliness, self-pity, criticism, gossip, procrastination. You name them, I had them. Guilt, shame, self-loathing, depression. I didn't know that alcohol was a depressant. You know, they taught me that in AA. I said, no, you guys are wrong. It made me feel good. Sure it did. Sitting, you know, at the bar by myself with that little glass, making those lazy circles, talking to myself and counting my change. Yeah. I was having a ball, yeah. But, you know, through the whole thing, I felt like I was a victim. You know, somebody had done something bad to me. And I wanted them to apologize to me. You know, I thought that was the way it was going to work out. They were always wrong, you know. And the more I thought about that, the madder I got. So I just was sore for a long time. Forget what words they use in here. I was burned up. Yeah, burned up. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. I'm Dave Alcoholic.
Dave.
Yeah, I keep going back to steps two and three as I'm reading this. Step four, and it says we asked ourselves why we were angry, and I'd been in treatment for about 10 days, and yeah, I was feeling pretty good. I was physically better. I'd admitted I was an alcoholic. I believe the doctor's opinion is probably the most important thing I'd ever read to me, and maybe still is. And but I got one night about 2 a.m, the nurse came out and told me to go to bed because we were out in the Serenity Garden, you know, swapping stories. I got really angry. You know, who is she to tell me what to do? I'm a grown man. And of course, you know, I'm in the asylum. So I went to bed because I wanted to get an A, you know, in treatment. But I was angry, and I did the only tool I had was the Serenity Prayer. So I got on my knees and I said the Serenity Prayer a bunch of times. And I woke up and I was still angry, and I said it through the shower. And then this guy who'd been there almost 3 months, he was an old timer, and I was on the 3 month plan there too. But it took him about an hour or two. Because I thought I was a smart guy, but to drill it through my thick head that under that anger was fear, and that I was scared of giving up control. But again, I had to look at my life and say I ended up in the asylum when I was in control. You know, and that was a big moment for me, because that's when I decided to basically, you know, give this thing a shot and do what people in AA said and listen to the counselors there, but really to get a sponsor. And to do this thing and give it a shot. And so, you know, when my mother died when I was 17, I stood at the grave and watched him lower her body. And I remember this vividly. And she had taken me to church and tried to instill these principles that we live by today in me, but her way didn't work, you know. But anyway, I said to myself, if this is all that's going to happen, I'm just going to have fun the rest of my life, which meant to party, to not care about anything. I was going to be mellow, you know, and I pursued that for a long time. But, you know, and so when I got to AA, I said, well, I don't have any resentments, you know. And I've been stuffing this stuff for years through the basic anger, indignation, self-pity, and that's where I was. But my sponsor at the time said, well, just list all your family members, all your former bosses, all your former girlfriends, and start there. And dang if I didn't find something on every one of them that I was resentful over. And so, you know, the key is to make the list, you know, to put the pen to paper. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. Continuing on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Billy?
Yeah. For me, I finally realized that the war wasn't with you. The war was inside me, and it was inside my head, and it was like this side fighting this side, you know? And my friend Alan told me, he said, you know, it's the story of the two dogs, you know? You have the big bad dog and you get the big good dog. Which one are you going to feed? And of course, I was feeding the bad dog all the time because I didn't have much esteem about myself. Inferiority, you know, like they say, you know, I guess I had that and a whole list of other things that you can say, you know, when I went for, you know, psychological help. I mean, they gave me a lot of labels. But the biggest one that I didn't like that they wrote down was chronic alcoholic. I didn't like that word at all. The other one I didn't like was psychic change, you know, in the big book. I didn't like that. It scared me. I didn't know what it meant. Then I asked my sponsor, he says, Billy, it just means a change of mental attitude. You gotta change your attitude, man. You know, if you wanna live. And little by little, you know, these words started to come alive in me. I started asking a lot of questions at that time and really seeking. I really became a seeker. I wanted to find out more about AAAA program and the history of AA. You know, we made a trip to New York, I remember, and I remember getting off the elevator and there was a whole bookshelf full of blue books. And they were all in different languages. And I realized that this thing's all over the world. I mean, there was hundreds of books on this thing, yeah. And we went to the gravesite of Bill Wilson's house. Something happened to me there. I met a Jewish rabbi who was at the house, and he was on vacation for 2 weeks, and he decided to be a greeter at the Stepping Stones. But he was not an alcoholic. And he told me, he says, I want to learn more about the spirituality of the alcoholic program. Anyway, I asked him if he would go down to the grave with me, and he said he couldn't leave his post, so to speak. Just then, another guy walked in with a bag of groceries, and he says, go ahead. His name was Perry. Perry, go ahead, you can go with him. So we went down there, and what surprised me was all the chips and medallions on top of the grave where people had visited. It wasn't in veneration of Bill, you know. It was just thanks to AA, you know. And that was another thing that touched my heart. It started to open up more. That's all. Yeah.
Dave Alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
And yeah, as I said earlier, my list was, you know, it was pretty long, just with the ones my sponsor told me to write, and then I managed to add a few more as I got into the process. But you know, what I found along the way was that so many of them were pointless, you know, that I've been carrying stuff for years that was just, you know, really nothing. And then and others were just my perception, you know, my take on how things had happened, and, you know, this process of learning to be honest with ourselves and to look at the reality, you know, was coming to fruition. And there were, you know, but there were a few that were deeply ingrained in me that kept me very sick for many years. My mother and my longest relationship, my business partner, you know, the key players in my life, you know. And in my mind, I fought this war that Billy talked about, you know, the he said, she said, and I should have done this, and I should have done that, or if I get a chance, I'm going to do this, and, you know. And then, again, anger to indignation to self-pity, which, you know, poor me, poor me, pour me another drink. Thanks.
All right, we're going to continue on page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. Really?
For me, the more I wanted to run the show, especially at home and at work and with my friends also, the more resentful they became. And I remember I was a member of this home group, the Plaza Group, on Thursday night at 8 o'clock, and I made the coffee every time, you know what I mean? I chaired the meeting every time. I, you know. And I was in charge, you know. And what had happened after a little while, they opened up another meeting on Thursday night at 8 o'clock in the church up the street, and they didn't invite me. I was abandoned by AA, you know. But, oh God, what do I do now? You know, I've really screwed up now. So I went to my sponsor and I told him what happened. He said, look, you just go up to that other group and you make a pot of coffee and you come back to your group and you wait there. And I said, okay. And I did what he told me to do. And you know, it worked out fine. You know what I mean? Those people stayed up there and some new people came, you know? But I learned my lesson, you know? I'm not in charge. God's in charge, yeah. So the one thing with my wife, I really resented the fact that she used to talk to everybody about my drinking. You know, I had no secrets at all. I mean, the time I drove to the garage doors, you know, and the washing machine and dryer got tossed around, you know, and all the bicycles. And I'm trying to put this door back together with some glue. And I go upstairs, we had four kids at that time, and I go up to check the kids in the room, because nobody came down, nobody. You know, it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I went up and all the kids are sleeping, it's nice, you know, quiet. Later on, they told me, Dad, we were awake, but we were afraid that if we went downstairs with you, you'd talk to us all night long, saying the same thing over and over. So, you know, I wasn't doing too good, you know? But in the last 2 years of my drinking, my entire personality changed, and I became very, very cynical and intolerant and arrogant. I resented anyone who might interfere with my drinking, anyone at all, especially employers too, you know, because I was drinking on the job. I had it right on my desk and they didn't even know it. But I was full of self-pity, and especially, like I said, I held resentments against the people who were interfering with my drinking. And I got very frustrated and, like this was saying, very, very unhappy. Loneliness, you know? I believe this, that the loneliest person in the world is someone who's lonely in AA. You know? You don't have to be lonely here. We make that contact, you know? That love is strong. You know, unconditional love is real strong. Anyway, like I said, I was shut off from the spirit, and I quit going to church long before that. I didn't pray or anything, you know, I just didn't care anymore. I felt like I was dying. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And my anger really was killing me. It was my own anger, I was killing myself. But I had a sponsor, and this guy, God bless him, He's passed away now. But one of them told, he said, stay calm and collected and divinely directed. And that stuck like Velcro, for some reason, stuck in my head. And the other thing he always said, if you're not happy today, what the hell day are you waiting for? Mm-hmm. His name was Charlie. I love Charlie. Thanks.
Thanks. Dave Alcock.
Dave.
You know, it says we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile, and I squandered years. You know, I didn't just shut myself off from the sunlight of the spirit. I shut myself off from the sunlight of other people and just sunlight in general. I spent 2 years on the couch in this hovel apartment I had out on the north end of Virginia Beach. I lived a block from the ocean, and I probably put my feet in the sand twice in those 2 years, you know.
I really didn't come out of there. I was on the couch pretty much the whole time. And I believe in clinical depression and following my doctor's advice, but in my case, I probably would have been diagnosed with depression, but it was self-pity. I mean, and it just isolated me. I was so lonely, so, you know, that terrifying loneliness it talks about in the big book, and I treated it by isolating myself. I had loving family that cared about me, but I did not respond. I quit responding because I didn't want them to see me in that condition, really. It was a big part of it. And they might try to interfere, you know? and who wants that, right? I'm so happy in there on that couch. And so I had no relationships, just no connection at all. And this brainstorm, the grouch in the brainstorm, for me, it's the brainstorm. It's, you know, back to that mental obsession that I can talk myself into believing anything. And whether it's on the couch or driving in my car today, you know, I recently was going through something, and as my sponsor often suggests, I did a pros and cons list, and it had about 4 pros and about 15 cons. And my self-seeking nature was still going for the pros, you know? But the good news is that, you know, now I might squander a week or a couple of weeks instead of years. Thanks.
Yeah. That's good.
All right. So I think we're still on 66 here. We turn back to the list. You got to have a list to turn back to. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, that we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended us, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
Yeah. My sponsor was a big help here for me also. He had me look at things differently, and he took the triangle, the AA triangle, and he said, "Okay, Billy, you're in this corner of the triangle. God is at the top of the triangle, and others are in the other corner." He says, "You have to go out of self, into God, then into others. If you try to just go along the baseline directly from me to them, you got problems." And he made it simple for me, you know. I had to have people put it in a picture. And I had to get rid of my resentments, and I had to learn, the slogans, you know, live and let live. That was real hard, you know. And I was taught to pray for others if I wished to be free of my resentments. That's what he suggested. He said, "Ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them." Well, that's totally different from the way I think. You know? So I did it. I did what he told me. I was willing to go to any length to stay sober. And I can tell you honestly today, I'm free. I'm free of those resentments. How it works, don't ask me. I don't know. Where the desire to drink went for me, I don't know. It's gone. I just don't have it today, okay? But my favorite saying, you know, in the whole program is, "Thy will be done." You know, but I had to practice love and tolerance, and that is our AA code. You know, that's the bottom line for us in AA, I believe. So when I have a sponsee that doesn't want to pay attention or doesn't, they want to do what they want to do, or they continue to drink or whatever. It's the way I was taught. That's another opportunity for me to grow and practice love and tolerance, you see. So I don't have to be the chief critic anymore or the judge or whatever. Thanks.
I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
And a couple of things that struck me were, of course, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real. As I said earlier, a lot of mine were fancied, and which, you know, made it fairly easy to let go of once I saw the truth. But this forgiveness piece, you know, I'd never really thought of that, you know. Maybe I should forgive them, because, you know, it was so much easier. I mean, I was taught that I forgive them for me, not for them, but for me, because it frees me. And I found that to be the case, that I don't have to carry that garbage around. And the truth is that nobody did anything to me that I haven't done to somebody else a lot more times and a lot worse. You know, I learned that through doing this fourth step, that, you know, that one of the biggest lies I told myself for years was I'm not hurting anybody but myself, because I isolated myself, like I said, and I kept away from people. But, you know, really the harm was through the emotional harm that I did my family by isolating, by being dishonest, by lying. Not to say that I didn't have a lot of financial and physical things I had to take care of as well, but, you know, this principle of forgiveness as the solution to resentment, it really helped to free me up tremendously. And, again, being able to see my part in it, which we're going to talk about in a second, but to see the things that I had done, actually lifted me up, made me, you know, I felt more like a human than what's on the bottom of my shoe a lot of days, you know. And so it made it a lot easier to forgive people once I saw that, yeah, I was doing the same thing. Thanks.
All right, we got a few minutes left. Our final paragraph is referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation was not entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and we're willing to set these matters straight. Billy?
Yeah. And going back to that little thing my sponsor taught me about uncover, discover, and then discard. This is all part of the discovery for me. You know, AA is different for me. I'm talking about finding the spiritual self, okay? I was always taught that God was up in the altar in a little box. You know, he lived, or he's in heaven, you know. But nobody ever told me he was inside me, you know. And I know in the seventh step, you know, tells me, the seventh step prayer, that I still have good and bad in me. And I still have the tenth step, you know, continue to take personal inventory. So I know that all my defects haven't disappeared, you know. So I'm given opportunities to practice if I want to. But I had to abandon myself to God as I understand him. I admitted my faults to him and to others. I cleared away the wreckage of my past. I have found the fellowship of the Spirit in AA. That's what I like to call it. It's the fellowship, okay? I have to stay in recovery, but I also need other people to help me. It's not a self-help program. And that was the toughest thing, was trying to ask for help, call and getting a telephone list. But now I'm just trudging the road of happy destiny, trudging the road of happy destiny, not to happy destiny. There's a difference. It's not a destination. We can have it today. And it's all one day at a time for me. And I hope to meet you on my journey. Thanks.
Thanks, Billy.
I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay.
And this kind of gives me goosebumps because this is where the freedom is for me, you know, that I had a part in this, you know, which, you know, I didn't allow myself to see until I came into this process of doing the fourth step. But that meant that if I had a part in it, that if I didn't do it anymore, maybe all this stuff, the terrible stuff wouldn't happen. I wouldn't feel so bad all the time, you know. It was very empowering. And the other side of that is that if I can do harm, I can also have a positive impact on people, you know, by practicing these principles. And that was just a gift that I did not expect, you know. I expected to just beat myself up and you know, walk out with my head down and in shame. But what I found was, yeah, that there were lessons to be learned and changes to be made, but that there was hope and there was a change available to me through the practice of the 12 steps and the principles therein. And I have to be careful not to overdo it, to not, you know, because I can take all responsibility on. I have to make sure that I'm honest about, you know, when others do have a part in it, and that I, you know, don't allow myself to get resentful again. And I am loving and tolerant, but I do see the truth in the situation, you know. And then at the end, it comes back to forgiveness for me, and loving and tolerant, but I was taught that when we get to step 8, we're using this same list, and that, you know, we became willing to forgive, became willing to make amends to them all. The willingness is that forgiveness. I have to make sure that I've forgiven them before I go into any amends process with them. So again, you know, this is where the payoff is for me, the freedom and the empowering nature of this process. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, David.
All right, we are going to pass the 7 tradition basket. Seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Is the basket coming up? Now, we do, in this group, we do the fourth step. We split it up into two different meetings. This is part one tonight. There's three things that he asks us to inventory. One is our resentments, which we covered tonight. The second one is fears. The third one is sex. So the really interesting meeting is going to be next week. Fear and sex. So make sure you come out.
Isn't that a Hunter Thompson?
Yeah. Fear and sex in Norfolk, Virginia.
Like that, yeah.
Are there, besides that, are there any other AA-related announcements?
My name's Dono. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dono.
Dono.
I belong to Billy's group, too, but... and days, but my Norfolk home group, we started a new meeting every Wednesday. It started last Wednesday on the 21st. It's an emotional sobriety meeting. We use the 2 volumes. We have books. We had about 25 people, 20 some people there, and 75% of the group was women, which I was really surprised. I didn't think it was going to be that many, but the first meeting was 28.
Where was that?
21st. It's at the United Church of Christ.
I'll come here first.
Yeah.
On Bayview Boulevard in Wayland, right on the corner. It's a brick church. It's actually 2 churches put together, old church and new church. So we're in the brick church on the corner of Wayland and Bayview. And you come in. It's 7:00 every Wednesday for the next 100 years. We've got a lease on the church.
Javier?
Mike? Hey,
Javier. Javier.
My home group, the West Gate group, which meets over at St. Anthony's Episcopal Church off Princess Anne's West Gate, is having its 34th anniversary different speaker on Wednesday, June 25th at 6:30. We will be providing dinner, which is fried chicken, so that should be pretty good.
Nice.
I would just ask if y'all If you want, bring salads and or desserts, and Lizzie T. from Hampton will be speaking. And I have a second announcement. Visky Pod, Virginia State Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, will be at the Wyndham, the Virginia Beach Oceanfront Hotel and Resort, over 55th, 56th Street area. This weekend starts Friday night, goes runs through Sunday, and it's $25. If you want more information, come see me after the meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Javier.
Thank you, Javier.
Any other announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise their hands. And not to embarrass anybody, but just to welcome you, is there anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? If we could just get your first name.
Annette,
welcome.
Welcome.
Thanks for coming.
Anybody else? There's literature available on that table over there. If you can fold it, it's free. The bound books we sell at cost, and if you can't make that, we can help you out with that. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we're going to have Victoria and Robert. Robert in the room? We're going to have Victoria and Evan up here at the table after the meeting. So guys usually go with guys and gals usually go with gals. I'm sorry about the guy-gal thing. Not politically correct. But anyway,
ladies,
if you have questions about sponsorship, just come on up and we'll talk to you.
Okay.
All right? And I absolutely didn't mean to suggest that the resentments talk wasn't interesting. Can we thank Billy and David again, please? I was trying to drum up support for next week. So I'd like to thank everybody who participated, and after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight, and all are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at
Plaza del Sol.
Plaza del Sol. What? It's closed today. We usually punt to Five Guys. We'll figure it out after the meeting, but most of us go out to dinner after this, so we'll figure that out. Anybody want to throw something out?
IHOP.
IHOP?
What about the other Mexican restaurant by Farm Fresh?
We're going to probably go to IHOP, but we'll talk about it after the meeting. And could I ask a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Y'all are changing chairs, right?
Go. Nice and loud.
Hey.
Amen.
That is like a prayer, isn't it?
So be it.
A new pair of glasses. Oh, I'm so good to see you, Billy. God is one. You know, I could feel you there this morning. I mean, it's
glad to be alive.
I'm telling you. Thank you.
Where are you?
Yeah, it was a blue shirt panel.
This is where such a big place. Place. We have a hard time making a circle. Sometimes we circle this whole room. It's amazing. Sometimes.
Wow.
Billy, will you lead us in the Lord's Prayer?
Okay. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Keep coming.